Welcome to Courtside, everyone, a discussion of the post-election litigation brought by Donald Trump. We've reached it, day 40 after the election. The litigation count stands at 1 out of 60 cases, 6-0, that Trump has won. And his one victory didn't give him any votes. Biggest loser ever, ever. Trump lost one more since I talked to you yesterday in the Georgia Supreme Court. Trump had filed a case trying to get the Secretary of State of Georgia's certification thrown out. The Georgia Supreme Court denied his attempt for emergency relief, saying Trump didn't meet the high bar that was required. At this point, Trump has zero cases, and the Trumpistas, zero cases anywhere in the trial courts. Zilch. All he's got now is appeals from past cases that he has lost somewhere else, like the one in the Wisconsin Supreme Court we talked about yesterday, which hasn't been ruled on yet. That's the one where the justices openly referred to Trump's lawsuit as racist. That's all he's got. The fallout from Trump's unanimous loss in the United States Supreme Court in the Texas case, aka the big one, continues. Trump just tweeted a few hours ago, quote, "The fact that the Supreme Court wouldn't find standing an original jurisdiction between matter between multiple states and including the president of the states is absurd. It is enumerated in the Constitution." End quote. I would love to know where Donald Trump finds that enumerated in the Constitution. I mean, the Constitution doesn't actually even mention the word standing, let alone standing for the president. And I don't know what president of the states is anyway. And if you want to know where the standing doctrine actually comes from, I'd point you to this 1983 law review article called "The Doctrine of Standing is an Essential Element of the Separation of Powers." Now, you can see the author there, Hugo Chavez, I mean, you know, Antonin Scalia. Antonin Scalia wrote this piece, and it explains that the doctrine of standing is essential to our constitutional order. And this is a larger point. Up until now, there were a lot of conservatives who spoke a lot about defending the Constitution and how aghast they were at judicial activism. I never want to hear another word from these people again about judicial activism. They have sought literally the most activist thing ever from judges in the history of the United States. And let me back up for a moment to just explain what I mean. The Supreme Court has the power to strike something down as unconstitutional. They have the power to say, Congress or state legislature, you can't do that. It's always controversial when it happens because it's a court taking decisions away from the American people. So, for example, if the government, Congress, or a state wants to ban handguns in the home, and the Supreme Court says, as it did, you can't do that under the Second Amendment, then no matter what the people want, even if 100% of people want to ban handguns, you can't do it. It's off the table in a democracy. That's the power of the Constitution. It supersedes ordinary laws passed by Congress. That's called the power of judicial review. Now, it's always hard to define the limits, what is and is not constitutional. There's a lot of debate about that. But many scholars agree that the place where courts can be more on the activism side is when they make it easier for people to vote. So the most important book in 20th century constitutional law, hands down, was written by Professor John Hart Ely. And that makes that argument, which is, you know, regardless of guns or abortion or schools or whatever, the one place in which federal courts have an undeniable role is making it easier for people to vote. Now, here's the thing. Trump and his Trumpistas are actually going into court and asking for the reverse. They're trying to ask for the federal courts to make it harder for people to vote and even to overturn an election. It's beyond preposterous. Okay, enough about that. Tomorrow is a big day. It's the day that the Electoral College votes. 3 United States Code 7 makes that the first Monday after the second Wednesday in December is the day the Electoral College meets, and that happens tomorrow. They're going to vote for the president and vice president with paper ballots and distinct ballots for the president and vice president. That's specified in the U.S. code. And you can watch, actually, this going on in many of the states tomorrow. It'll be live streamed starting at 10 a.m. Eastern time. California is going to go at 5 p.m. Eastern. And what's going to happen is each elector is going to sign 6 certificates, and they'll go to the Senate president, the state secretary of state, the Archivist of the United States, and the local district judge. And these electors who are going to vote tomorrow, who are they? Well, they're chosen largely by party officials, either Republican or Democrat in each state. They're very much usually party people. Now, every so often you have so-called faithless electors, people who say they're going to vote Democrat and vote Republican or vice versa. It's really rare. In 2016, 7 people did that. Now, 33 states plus Washington, D.C. require the electors to select who voted, who won the popular vote. So they're not allowed to be faithless. 17, though, do not. So you could have some of these faithless electors tomorrow, and you can have some machinations in those 17 states. But don't worry, because the thing is, Biden has 306 electoral votes by dint of the vote of the election on November 3rd, and he only needs 270. So even if Trump can, who knows what he'll do to try and cajole those electors, but even if he succeeds with a few, it's not going to matter. It's not going to change the dynamic that Biden's going to have way, way over 270. So they're all going to vote, and then each state is going to ship off their votes to Congress, and there'll be a joint session of Congress on January 6th with Vice President Pence presiding. And there, Congress is going to officially cast the votes. And when Mr. Biden reaches 270, as he undoubtedly will, the Vice President will announce the result and call Mr. Biden the President of the United States. Or will he? This spineless, worthless shell of a man has never done one thing yet to protect Americans or our Constitution. I mean, my stapler has done more against Trump's assault on America than this man. So I don't hold my breath about what Pence is going to do in January. Luckily, it's not going to matter. Even if he objects, the Electoral Count Act from 1887 makes it impossible for this maneuver to go anywhere. Both houses of Congress have to disqualify a state's electors, not one. There is no chance the United States House of Representatives would do so, despite the fact that there are 126 Republican members in the House that are advocating something pretty close to sedition, as we talked about yesterday. That's not a majority. And as the bard says, you don't have the votes. See you tomorrow.